Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. It's May the 22nd, 2022, just in case we air this at a later date. And my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us today, Bill?
Well, our sponsor is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. And right now you can go down there and have a great selection of John Deere tractors in the yard and ready to go. Mowers are a little slim, but they do have some mowers in stock. Mower season's almost over. I mean, we're ramping up to July or June here, so that'll be the end of that. But anyway, there's still time to go down and get yourself a new John Deere lawnmower. They also do parts and service. They can work on pretty much anything. So go down and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake. Or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And you'll know you are at Pape Machinery when you see the Gorton's Fishermen hanging from a wire up there on their sign.
Oh, yeah. We had a little windstorm here the other night.
Their John Deere banner ripped off both the ends, but it hung in the middle. And so it just looks like the Gorton's Fishermen just dangling from a wire.
It looks a lot like a raincoat hanging up there. So you want a little chuckle, go up I-5.
Turn right at the raincoat.
Yeah. Look for the raincoat.
Yeah. I saw it last night. I was like, God, it does kind of look like a raincoat. Not good. Yeah, Not a good look.
Needs a little repair. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's way up there. I mean, how are you going to do it? You got to call a guy. Huh?
You got to call a guy with the lift.
Huh.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. This election thing is like, it's just so far out of control. People have all gone crazy. And you know this. You know I'm telling you the truth. It doesn't matter what team you're on either. They've all, just the madness has, I guess that's when we call it madness. Crazy isn't.
Chaos.
Yeah, it's just madness has swept the country. Doesn't matter what you're talking to them about, the madness creeps in. You can talk about food, all of a sudden, madness.
All of a sudden.
I'm sure the Gorton's Fisherman thing is going to set somebody off. So
yeah.
Shouldn't even joke about it. Oh, my gosh. Our guest today is going to unscramble the madness for us, though. That's what he promised. Isn't that great? He didn't tell us anything.
Set the agenda, Aaron.
He didn't tell us anything. I was just like, okay, good. Marcus is going to unscramble everything. His friend who told me to have him on said he could do anything. So we are counting on that today.
Putting the pressure on or anything.
Well, okay, so let's look at his little bio here since he has not been with us prior. He was a military police officer, so he is a professional with chaos, actually.
He should
be great at that in the U.S. Army. And been involved with the conservative activism and bringing the fight for conservative values to Southern California. And, well, if you were going to start anywhere, that would be the hardest place.
You know, that's going to be a fight.
Yeah, you should start up here. It's a lot easier. Marcus has been involved with many organizations such as Turning Point USA, the Freedom Foundation, and the Republican National Hispanic Assembly. So he was the president under Turning Point USA chapters and sits on the state board for the RNHA, sure, easy for me to say. He has appeared on OANN, Daily Caller, Fox, Telemundo, Turning Point Live, PragerU, Campus Reform. Really fun. He's been fighting the left and public policy, working on public policy that will save America. And gosh, that's a wide array of things. You could start pretty much anywhere since everything has gone crazy. But he loves the outdoors, takes a lot of pictures, enjoys spending as much time as possible traveling and meeting new people. So that's kind of awesome. He has an associate's degree in communication from Mount San Antonio College and is currently pursuing his undergraduate degree in public relations, Cal State University Fullerton, and committed to fighting for California and conservative values in the Latino community. So this is kind of a, I don't know, like a topic we haven't, we don't know a lot about it. So Marcos Zalata Rojas.
Welcome, Marcos.
I asked him if he was... Zalata, or...
Hey, how's it going, Aaron and Bill? It's a pleasure to be on with you guys today.
I figured it was sort of a potato-potato thing. I had to ask him. Like, I'm going to get hung up on this. I know I am. Oh,
you're going to get hung up on, all right.
I know.
Yeah.
So many things. So, Marcos, I mean, I kind of really did leave it up to you. I'm curious what's going on down at your end of the state and what you're seeing.
Kind of like you mentioned, it's pretty chaotic right now, and I think it's not isolated to just California. I don't think it's isolated just to the Democrat strongholds like California. It really is nationally chaotic right now, and it kind of comes from a place of losing our sense of who we are as a nation, the values that made us the greatest power in the world, and a president who is kind of lost, if you ask me. And I think that's kind of the idea that everyone's holding right now. We have a lack of leadership, and it trickles down very effectively and can cause a lot of chaos, as you mentioned.
Yeah, being lost is being kind.
Yeah.
I'm trying to keep it good.
Well, you know, it's true. I mean, he's wandering around. You know, he doesn't really know what's going on. But, just when we thought we were thrilled to see the Obama people leave, it's like, oh, they're back. They're all back again. And they weren't good when they were in there.
Yes. And, although I do understand there's chaos, I mean, people are struggling with the inflation. People are struggling with the fact that our representatives can send money to foreign nations while we're struggling at home. I understand there's a lot of struggle. I mean, hey, I'm not immune to those struggles. I absolutely feel those struggles and the pains that are coming with this current economy under this administration. But I will say this. I believe there's a lot to be hopeful for. I truly is. I am an optimist at heart. I try to be able to, keep marching forward, and kind of roll with the suck, as they used to say in the military. And I think if anything out of the president's current administration is that it's so bad, it will turn more people Republican. And that is something I am very grateful for amongst all the bad that they're doing.
I think so, too, because honestly, when I was in high school, it was Jimmy Carter. And this is every bit, except for the gas lines. We haven't gotten there yet, but this is Jimmy Carter.
No, we haven't got there yet because people don't have any money left to get in the line for gas.
But we took a huge swing right after that. So
yes, we did.
I don't know.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think it's already happening. I mean, just last year, from January to June, Democrats had a 32-point advantage in Hispanic American party identification. So Hispanic Americans were voting Democrat by a 32-point advantage. Now, when they looked at July through December, it's only a 28-point advantage going Democrat. And I think that will continue to sink if President Biden doesn't get it together and the Democrat Party realizes instead of identity politics, they need to actually have policy that has substance in it that helps the American people. That's from Reuters. And, I mean, Latinos or Hispanics, better said, account for 19% of the U.S. population. And I can tell you very confidently that Latinos are not leftists. They're not communists. They are not Democrats. They simply have been lied to you, and the current administration is making them wake up. And with the right activism, the right messaging with the Republican Party, a lot can be done here to capitalize on their mistakes.
It's interesting. So when you, when you speak to different groups and they say, and let's just say they think that the Democrats are totally on their team. Where do you start? Like, where do you start to unscramble that for them?
Well, I think the best thing we can do is find the common ground. So, especially when I talk to Latinos, I'm also involved with Turning Point USA, although today I speak just on my own behalf. It's about finding the common ground. I think most people want to be able to know that they'll have a job next month, that they'll be able to get baby formula for their children, that they'll be able to put food on their tables. And you can break down these policies that are actually affecting them at home, right? The dinner, top conversation. So when they're talking about these things, they're not as polarizing as most people believe. Now, of course, I do have a mindset that, listen, if they're far left leftists who are, of a fundamental idea that America is bad and everything about it is bad and the Republicans are devils walking amongst the earth, you're not going to save that person. At that point, you might as well just go find someone else who can cancel out their vote. But when you can find the common ground and talk about things that matter, most people start to realize that our values and our ideas align, right? Conservatives want a limited government so we can have a better economy with more jobs and less restrictions. They want a more involved government, but ultimately still want good jobs and a better economy, which they can thrive in. And then it comes down to sometimes fundamentally is it the government's job to give you that, or is it the government's job to get out of their way so that way it can be the best it can be through the free markets? And it's just little things like that where you can start changing people's minds. And when it comes to students, I mean, it's not as bad as people think. I mean, don't get me wrong. Nationally, it's very bad for students right now. I am in thick of it. Believe me, I've been attacked by my university's institutions, my students, I mean, death threats, you name it. But that's all right, because at the end of the day, nationally, nearly 4 out of 10 young people aged 18 to 29 voted for President Trump. And that's almost halfway there, and we can keep going, because I can tell you right now, after COVID-19, when people experience what it felt like to be stepped on by the government, what overreach and tyranny felt like, a light bulb moment happened, and they realized, okay, a big involved government who tells me what to do, probably not a good idea. And they wanted that individual liberty by giving them a taste of what it's like when it's taken away. So, again, I am hopeful.
Yeah, I thought about that, what the young people were thinking or what they thought the whole restrictions on COVID. What their final thoughts on that were.
Well, down there, it was bad, too.
Yeah,
down where you are was really...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I can tell you right now that in the liberal strongholds that are our universities in America, most students wanted a vaccine mandate. Most students wanted to force others to wear masks. When the Turning Point chapter that I lead at Cal State Fullerton attended a freedom rally, they talked about spraying us with vaccine mist in their internal
that
we had access to. So they're talking about basically what's, symbolically chemical warfare against those who think mandates are bad, right? And that's just what it is. But when you were talking to the normal students, and all due respect to them, they might be very great people. They just hold very wrong ideas and don't act the right way about them. But when you were talking to the moderates, the people who weren't really sure about politics yet, because all they hear about is their professors just spit out all this, trash in their classrooms. When you talk to them and you really present ideas like, hey, do you think it's okay for any governing body to tell you anything about what medication you should insert in your body? And, you bring up the irony. What happened to my body, my choice? If you believe in that, how does this not equate to that? And, again, the light bulb moments happen. So regular people were against it, and unfortunately, some students were just too afraid to stand up or didn't even know they had other options. So I know of many students who got the experimental COVID-19 vaccine because they thought they had to, without knowing there was exemptions and that there were people who would fight to make sure that they got their exemptions, like myself and many organizations like Turning Point USA.
Wow. Well,
it was a somber time.
I would imagine in the Hispanic community, the whole abortion thing is a big deal as well.
It is.
I can't imagine that they're in favor of that. That just seems culturally
opposite.
Doesn't seem to fit.
No, there's been many articles that have been written about the fact that Latinos are very conservative, right? We come from religious backgrounds. We believe in family units. We believe in being pro-life based on our own morals as well as our strong background in religion. And we don't agree with the leftist ideas of killing your child out of inconvenience. And we truly believe in constitutional rights and making the America dream happen for ourselves like it has for others. We don't scream at the moon and say, why is America racist? Everything's against me. No, they buckle down.
But that's so popular right now.
Right.
It's incredibly popular right now.
Exactly.
How are you ever going to get any followers if you don't do that? I mean, everybody knows that's how it works.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh. We have to take a really quick break. You know what? I just solved the debt crisis because I found out where all the money is. It's down by Marcos.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a whole song about it and everything.
Huh.
So we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
All the gold in California is in a bank in the middle of Beverly Hills in somebody else's name. So if you're dreaming about California, it don't matter at all where you played before. California's a brand new
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
The pandemic has taken a toll on our country.
The Dow plunging hundreds of points, its worst showing of the year.
A shaky economy, financial strain, all made worse by politicians trying to take advantage.
In California, New York, a lot of the blue states where businesses are really struggling to find people. And so what can they do?
Homelessness, rising crime, constitutional rights infringed upon by shutting down schools, churches, and small businesses.
There's a lot going on in the economy. There's a lot of uncertainty at the kitchen table.
Now is the time to stand up for community. Now is the time to move people forward.
I'm Kevin Cry. I'm not a politician. I'm a lifelong Shasta resident, and I don't recognize what our community has become. I'm running to lead with backbone. I'll prioritize public safety and make our community more affordable.
Our local leaders have let us down. We can do better.
Let's bring the North State back.
Paid for by committee to elect Kevin Cry, Shasta County Supervisor, District 1.
Hey kids, what's your favorite kids' meal at Black Bear Diner? Is it a mini volcano, burger sliders, chicken strips, or strawberry French toast? This month, have a grown-up bring you into Black Bear Diner, and while you're here, ask for a happy cupcake coloring sheet, get creative, and have them post your creation for a chance to win a meal for you and your favorite adult. We can't wait to see what you come up with. Happening this month only at Black Bear Diner, 2605 Hilltop Drive in Reading.
Black Bear Diner.
That song is like an all-purpose song, but that's mostly leftists. So they've moved into our neighborhoods. They've taken over our towns. Do you deal a lot with the college students, Marcos? Is that what's your primary audience?
I've had a lot of years of activism on the college front. You know, with Turning Point USA, I mean that's the trenches right there.
Right.
We're fighting the culture war with a sense of urgency, trying to change minds and convince people of what the right way forward is every single day. And I can tell you right now, we have faced so many threats, backlash, doxing, I mean, you name it. It's as bad as you can imagine. It's just like that.
Do they show up like that? Or do you see a difference between, like, a freshman class and a senior class? I realize you know.
Truthfully, yes. I do see a transition. The longer you're in that echo chamber of leftist waste, it turns you into a different person. It truly does. So our happiness comes from getting to people sometimes when they're freshmen, sophomores, or juniors who are still reasonable, and sometimes seniors who just realize this whole time that something wasn't right. And that's where the happiness comes from, when you convince people, hey, this is the way forward, or hey, you hold these ideas, it's time to be outspoken. And it's a good time, even with all the negative leftists all around you.
I wonder, you know, when you come from home, you might be a little bit ideological, but typically, unless your parents are pretty hardcore into politics, which the bulk of people are not. It seems like you're going to show up at college and it's going to be a new place and you're kind of excited, and it seems like you might have a shot at those folks. Any difference between boys and the girls?
I have noticed that it does follow similar trends that have been found through studies, that women do seem to have a more left-leaning political ideology.
Yeah, I wonder about that.
I mean, don't get me wrong. The men on universities are not the men I served with, that's for sure. And they do lean very far left. They're not, they're not a man's man, to say the least.
They're not army material.
But it does follow the trend where men do slightly hold more conservative values. But I can tell you right now, our Turning Point chapter at Cal State Fullerton and many others that I've noticed nationwide, I have amazing friends, it is led by amazing conservative women. And I have found that conservative women are actually some of the best fighters in the movement. Even though nationally women may lean more left, the conservative women are absolute fighters, and they're at the very front lines.
Yeah, we saw that like with the Tea Party, you know, like 12 years ago. A lot of the groups wound up being really propelled by women. But I'm thinking on a college campus, I think girls sometimes go into that fuzzy bubble of, you know, ideological silliness. And I'm not sure men ever really escape from the idea of I'm going to have to grow up and earn a living. Like, they can't marry someone who's going to earn a living for them.
Right. That is true. That value and that view is still there.
I think in the back of their head, they're like, I still have to go out. I can't get that lesbian studies degree I was thinking about because that's going to make me unemployable.
Right. I actually need to put food on the table somehow.
Well, I think there's just got to be a tremendous amount of pressure on kids when they hit the college campus with you know, like you were saying, the indoctrination, you know, 8 hours a day, it'd be pretty easy for them to just kind of go with the flow, and then the next thing you know,
we're on the team, we're wearing a pink hat and marching in the streets.
There you go.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's terrible. I've had a American studies professor who was teaching a class on the American dream, which I, as a conservative, as a patriot, was, hey, okay, I want to learn this academically. Let's see what this is about. Knowing that there was a 50-50 chance to be a leftist teaching the course, and unfortunately it was. And on the first day of class, the professor said that America isn't that great, and it's pretty much not different from anywhere else in the world. Everyone has similar rights. We're not unique in that sense.
Oh, wow.
And I quickly disagreed. And I always joke around that it probably knocked me down a grade or two, but it is worth it. And it's just crazy the type of indoctrination to the level they go. I've had students tell me that they had to take privilege quizzes. And when
they had to take a what?
A privilege quiz, which is a questionnaire that calculates how privileged you are depending on your income. Majority of the time it's because of the pigmentation of your skin. So if you happen to be a little bit lighter, you're more privileged. If you're darker, you're underprivileged and a victim.
Oh, wow.
And they use the worst or the most privileged persons as an example. And that happened to be one of my students who came forward with that. And she felt embarrassed. She felt attacked. She did not grow up wealthy. She just happens to be half white and half Hispanic. But because she's half white, she's an oppressor. Because, of course, the university is prescribed to the ideas of critical race theory, and it's unfortunate. And one of the scariest things to me is not so much that it's happening in the colleges, but people don't realize how early it's starting to happen now. This is going on in elementary schools across the world as well. The U.S. has become an exporter of these bad ideas, the critical race theory, this idea that depending on the pigmentation of your skin, what race you are, what your culture is, you are inherently privileged or underprivileged, and no matter if you aren't racist, it's still there, subconsciously in you. And it's going on in elementary schools, sometimes as early as pre-K and kindergarten, across America. We've seen it in Florida with BLM marches. We've seen slave auction recreations that were extremely racist, and I won't even describe them, but they were made in an attempt to be woke and appealing to the leftist ideas of of inclusion, and it's sad. And California is one of the worst on it. Yorba Linda has an amazing school board, and they banned critical race theory. So what happens? Cal State Fullerton, of course, my school, unfortunately, says that they're going to make sure their teachers know about critical race theory, understand it, and are well-equipped to teach it and implement it in their teaching programs. And these are people that are going to go out to teach middle schools, elementary schools, and high schools one day.
Oh, no. They're going to be the people with the green hair we see on those videos.
Exactly. People say, extreme examples here and there. That's not the case. It's more widespread than people think.
Yeah. You know, and the sad part about that is they never take into account the kids and the people who got it the hard way. No, they earned it. They worked. They took odd jobs to earn money to go to college, and nothing was handed to them. But they get bunched in. You know, they get thrown in with the same crowd that you're privileged. You're not privileged. Yeah. You earned it. And that's the part that I think is especially sad when kids do step up and take responsibility and earn the right to be there, and then they get there and they find out, well, you're privileged.
Exactly. Yeah, and I can't imagine how my life would be if, when I was growing up as a young kid, if I was told, oh, because I am a dark-skinned Latino man, that I am inherently going to be underprivileged in America, that all the white individuals around me have a leg up on me, and I will never be as good at them because of the systematic racism in America. I can imagine what that would have done to me, coming from a very poor background of immigrant parents to where I am now. I wonder what type of psychological effect that would have on me. Mm-hmm. Would I have been eager to work on my circumstances, go and serve my country with pride, get an education, or would I have just been in this perpetual sense of, I'll never be great because the system is against me?
Exactly.
And it's extremely dangerous, and it's disgusting, quite honestly. I will always say that people who subscribe to the idea of CRT and push these ideas are truly the racists. Because either one, they think minorities are underprivileged and they need a lower standard in math and education and help us because we can't help ourselves, or because they think that all white people, no matter who they are racist. And last time I checked, if you classify all people as one thing, you're basically following the same thing as any other racist, and that is wrong.
Yeah. As a minority person, to hear that, it's got to be just so, I don't know, it's just a kick in the gut to think that you're supposed to feel that way when really you don't feel that way. You feel good about who you are and where you came from, and yet they're telling you, well, you're disadvantaged.
Well, but then any bump in the road, right? There isn't anybody who's you know, you apply for a job and you don't get it. Well, you don't get it, and you don't get it, so you go to the next one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that big a deal, but if you've been kind of programmed for all that time, it's like, oh, I know why I didn't get the job.
Exactly.
Right. I'm not the first person to come up with this. People much smarter than me, like Charlie Kirk and Douglas Murray, talk about this a lot. But they say there's a supply and demand problem in the United States when it comes to racism. We have a large demand for it and a low supply for it.
That is pretty funny. That's totally true.
We regurgitate this lies about systematic racism and push it into kids as little as elementary school, sometimes even younger. And it's a shame, especially here in California, when a majority of our kids are not even up to standards in English, math, or science. So
right.
They're more worried about teaching wokeism than they are teaching them English, math, and science, things that will actually affect their future and their outcomes of not only those kids, but our entire state and nation.
Yeah, and you look at, you look at the kids that are just the white kids, your run-of-the-mill white kids. Well, they're told that they have all these privileges. Well, I guess, you know, when you're a kid, you're not a real, I mean, children sometimes do say things that are sort of philosophical, but children are not philosophers.
No.
And so they're not thinking about the wider implication of that. But if you're told that all the time, you're thinking, well, I can sit down and slide uphill.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have to do anything.
Yeah,
this is all
exactly.
going to fall right on me. And I thought, you know, it's a bad message. Nobody wins in that message, actually.
Exactly. Yeah, and there are ways to fix it. I mean, Florida has been very strongly against it.
Yeah.
They have the great Governor DeSantis there. And although we may not be under such a lucky leadership as DeSantis, we have someone a little bit worse, to say the least, Newsom, there are other leaders that we can affect. You know, there's Tony Thurmond. He's the superintendent of public instruction in California. I can tell you right now, they're not doing anything to stop this. They wouldn't dare lift their fingers against the unions that are giving them millions. They wouldn't dare to question the leftist agenda. And that's why I personally am really hoping for Lance Christensen to be the next superintendent of public instruction. I mean, that's someone who's worried about getting the education fixed first. It's someone who's advocated for school choice in the past, which should be a right that actually helps minorities the most out of anything we can do policy-wise right here, right now in California. I mean, and that's how you really move the nation forward. Instead of telling everyone they're underprivileged, and if you're white, you're racist, no matter what you actually hold in your heart, it's inherently there, subconsciously or consciously. No, we need someone like Lance Christensen to focus on education and tell kids, hey, we got to learn how to do 2+2 before we learn white and white equals ultimate racist. Like, we can't be doing those type of things. And truly, I mean, I'm excited for that. I think those are type of things that make me hopeful, like I mentioned before, an optimist, that we do have good candidates running like Lance and many others who can make changes in their respective circles and spheres of influence and change a lot of that craziness that we're seeing, especially here in California.
Well, it's interesting too. Like in the, we didn't want to leave today without what you're seeing in Southern California, what the prevailing sentiment is about what's going on the border.
What is the? I mean, in the Hispanic conservative Hispanic groups that you meet with, what's the sentiment there?
Well, I can tell you quite honestly, it's not necessarily a top concern for the Hispanic community. They are really worried about the economy and the jobs, and they're really worried about crime.
Yeah, and that's another little thing, too.
On, right, is that some of this crime, and a good chunk of it, is made worse by our open border crisis.
Right.
You have cartels operating in Northern California. You have cartels operating in Los Angeles. You have cartels operating in San Bernardino County in the Inland Empire, which is where I'm from. And you have cartels operating in San Diego and along the border, and these are not good people, and they're pushing in fentanyl that's killing people left and right, and should be declared a complete emergency. But of course, if you do that and you talk about the border, next thing you know, the progressives are calling you racist, so you can't do that. You just have to let people die instead, apparently, according to the Democrat Party and their actions thus far. So they're really worried about the economy and crime, but it does play into the border crisis. They go hand in hand, unfortunately. Because when you have widespread drug addiction, that's going to increase crime. That's how you get those petty crimes like the catalytic converters being stolen, you know, petty theft of properties at stores. It's a domino effect that we could stop at the source. And it's just about explaining that to people. Because most people, when they think the border, like, oh, they just don't want to let people in, or, you know, they just want stronger security. We get that, but it's not our primary concern. When you explain how much of a serious cause and effect it has on their communities, then they start to realize, okay, this is a problem.
Yeah.
And I'm of the mind, I think, like many conservatives nowadays are, that we need immigration reform very soon, and something that's actually going to work. We need to vet people correctly. We need to get people to come here, correctly, the right way, so they can, you know, be fruitful in their endeavors. But we can't have it ramp into illegal immigration.
No.
It's not okay. It's not possible. And we are a nation of law and order, and we need to protect our sovereignty and our borders.
Well, another thing.
Followed our own laws, it'd be fun to just say, like, hey, let's follow our own laws, the ones we have.
Yeah,
let's follow those
ones
for a year and see what happens.
Well, I think it's terribly unfair to the folks that came here legally, that went through the system, that waited years to get that piece of paper that says they're a citizen, something they can be proud of. And then you have the group that just comes across.
Yeah.
I would think that would just incense people, that they did it the right way, and heck, they should have just waited.
Absolutely.
They did it the right way, and they're having a job, and they're struggling, and these other guys are rolling in, getting handed a cell phone.
We can't forget that in California, they gave them their own stimulus check out of the American taxpayer pocket. Unbelievable. You know, a majority of them may not be paying taxes. I can guarantee you that not everyone who received the stimulus check have paid their taxes in the past. Many do, but it's definitely not all of them, right? And then you have the possibility of, you know, President Biden thinking about giving them separation pay if they were separated from the family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Giving them more money
yeah.
than I would have received if I died while serving my country.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was more than U.S. service members get from their life insurance.
Yeah, when I heard that, it was crazy. That was absolutely
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, that's like you can't actually think that's going to work. We have to take a really quick break, but our guest today is Marco Salata Rodas, and he is he's working in Southern California. I don't know if that's for the most part. We're going to find out when we come back. We should find out what other things he's working on before suddenly we're out of time, because I feel that happening. It's going fast today.
Yeah, it is.
Weird. So you'll be able to find the commercial-free archive on this later this afternoon. It's May the 22nd, 2022, and we're at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice job.
Give a man a free house and he'll bust out the windows, put his family on food stamps. Now he's a big spender, no food on the table, and the bills ain't paid, cause he's spending on cigarettes and PGA. They'll turn us all into beggars, cause they're easier to please. They're feeding our people that government cheese.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
Axiom Repertory Theater presents live on stage Mel Brooks' madcap comedy, Young Frankenstein.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits?
Young Frankenstein, May 6th through the 29th. Tickets at the box office on Bocelli Lane or online at axreptheater.com.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Tutankhamun, Wonderful Things, Treasures from the Pharaoh's Tomb is open now through September 5th in Reading at Turtle Bay Museum, featuring authentic reproductions of King Tut's ancient Egyptian treasures. Presented by Senator Kay Maurice and Marianne Johannesson in association with the Museum of Ancient Wonders. This exhibition is included with paid park admission, free for Turtle Bay members. Tutankhamun, Wonderful Things, Treasures from the Pharaoh's Tomb, open now through September 5th at Turtle Bay Exploration Park. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Well, the eagle's been flying slow, and the flag's been flying low, and a lot of people saying that America's fixing to fall. But speaking just for me, and some people from Tennessee, we got a thing or two to tell you all. This lady may have stumbled, but she
Selected Joe.
Sleepy Joe.
Sleepy Joe. I forgot that had Russians in it. I was like, oh, that's kind of timely. So on a wider, conservative politics side, what do you see happening this year?
Well, I am very confident the red wave is coming. I believe that Republicans have a tremendous chance this coming election cycle to capitalize on the mistakes of the Democrats, and as you mentioned, our not-so-great Sleepy Joe, and really show the American people that under conservative leadership, with the principles of conservative values, America is more efficient and is more greater than without it. And I do see a red wave coming, and I'm really excited to see it.
Well, that's kind of nice. So when you guys go to Turning Point, I know speaks on campuses and things. Are you kind of part of that? Are you involved in that part of it?
Yes. So when Turning Point does events, it's a variety. Students table on campus almost weekly with posters, and they talk to students, and they try to find conservative students or like-minded students who are interested in learning more or hold those values and didn't know they existed. And they bring them in and they create a strong, almost like a family on a campus of conservative students who can speak out because they are together instead of being isolated amongst a sea of leftists all alone. And they hold speaking events. So I've been super grateful to have been asked to speak at a few universities. We've had great speakers come to Cal State Fullerton, like Charlie Kirk and many others. And they do that throughout the nation, and they just help bring the ideas to the echo chamber that are universities.
Well, do you find, I mean, because what we hear, right, we're only catching what gets reported, but, you know, we're hearing that it's almost impossible for you guys to do that, and you get protested, and it's a big, you know, you're basically shut out all the time.
Sure, that is a very common problem, but nothing really is impossible, and if you don't accept defeat, and if you refuse to stand down, most of the time, they don't know what to do. When you take the threats of protest and laugh at it, and then post about it, making jokes about them for it, they don't know how to act. I mean, I've had people say that they were going to protest an event we did at Cal State Fullerton. And it was hilarious. And I retweeted them. And I said, have fun. I hope you have a good time. And they just don't know how to act when you're unafraid. Now, I've been blessed because I am a veteran. So I really do see it as a mission that, you know, I will die for in a sense. And quite honestly, to save my country and promote conservative values, I mean, if someone takes me out, it would be worth it. It's better that than being quiet. But I tell my students all the time, you know, you have to shout it from the rooftops. You have to be strong and proud about who you are and what you believe in, because conservative values aren't hateful values. They're actually the values that care the most about people and their rights and their well-being and economic features. That's just a fact. The Democrat Party does not care about those things, even though they say they do.
I think their recent stand on abortion has pretty much sealed their fate there.
Right, exactly. So, and if they tell you to stop yelling, well, you start talking, and if they tell you you can't do that, well, you grab a sign and you start walking in circles. And if they take out your legs, you start crawling. And if they, you know, take you out more, well, then you're holding the sign with your jaw if you have to. But you don't stop. And that's the idea. And Turning Point USA students really do have that mentality of fighting extremely hard, being unafraid. And, of course, it takes some time, but once you have a good chapter, which many universities do, they do not back down. I mean, there could be 500 people outside protesting, and they're inside having a blast, convincing people who are moderate or empowering students who are already conservative. And like I said, today I am speaking on my own, but I truly do have a lot of admiration for Turning Point USA, and I've been extremely grateful for my time with them.
Well, you know, I guess it's just an opportunity for us to learn a little bit about it, because we get little snippets out in the world, and, you know, let's face it, the bulk of people are not in college, so we're not, you know, we're not part of that. So for all the people out there that really want to support that mission, you know, I mean, if you're more comfortable with that, we could, you know, we'd love to have somebody on from that to just do a pitch and build some support. But what's
absolutely. Well, I mean, if people want more information or they just want to donate $5 because they like the idea and what we're doing, they can go to tpusa.com at any time to donate or learn more. We have a bunch of conferences for students. We have the Young Women's Leadership Summit coming up. We have the Student Action Summit coming up, and that's really where students are motivated and engaged, and they leave with a sense of understanding of how important the fight is and a motivation that is unlike anything else I've ever seen in my life. And they take that to their universities and colleges across America and fight for good causes.
That's awesome. I'll put a link on the page for today so people can get a look at that. But, I mean, you have to really be living in a hole not to have ever heard of Turning Point USA. But do you know what they do? Do you know how to help them? I mean, that's all very different.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of great organizations. I mean, there's a lot of good causes in California. I mean, we have churches getting motivated and fighting back against the left like I have never seen before, at least in my lifetime. We have, again, I've been blessed to work with the Republican National Hispanic Assembly, truly helping candidates understand the Hispanic American community, engaging the Hispanic American communities in places where traditionally the right has not been in. And it's because we understand Latinos are conservative, and we're going to keep fighting to show them the truth that the Democrats are not for them. They're against them. They just use them for identity politics and their numbers. And we just have so many great causes, like I said. Lance Christensen, running for office. We have, I mean, amongst many other amazing candidates. It's a good time.
Yeah, let's
right
not gloss that over. That. So if you're looking at your ballot, that is state superintendent of schools, Lance Christensen. And the good part is he's the guy at the top of the ticket, or, you know, top of the list, so that makes it easy.
That's right, yeah. And that's starting there with our education system will help a lot. And then supporting great causes like the RNHA, Turning Point USA, getting involved with your local GOP. I mean, this is how we make changes happen and make that red wave come, like I was mentioning earlier.
I think it's an important thing for people to hear from folks like you, because what happens, you're constantly bombarded with this race thing, and the danger is people just shut down on it. So they just, you know what I mean? They stop engaging. It's like I'm just gonna get filleted if I go there. And that's just basically not true. It sounds like the folks you're dealing with are all they're looking for a more productive country. They're looking for a future. This isn't all about tearing the place to the ground.
I mean, I've had incidents where a young leftist on my college, or at my university, better said, flipped me off, called me ugly, said I was terrible, all for handing out informational pamphlets on the known communist Angela Davis, who came to speak at my university. She went from that to 30 minutes crying in my arms because she felt bad about the way she was acting. And that's part because we don't act like they do. And every day I pray that President Joe Biden all of a sudden comes to this realization that what he's doing is not the best, all of a sudden becomes completely capable of finishing sentences and fixes our country and does great things. Because truthfully, I don't want our president to fail.
No.
I don't want anyone in a position of leadership to fail. And I want these leftists to realize what they're doing is wrong, and these ideas aren't helping anyone but themselves, because being a victim is part of their identity, and being woke and who can outwoke each other is part of how they get validation because of their own issues at home and in themselves. I pray for all these people. I want them to do good. But until they do, we have to take the mantle and talk about the truth with conviction, with strength, but with love at the same time. And that's how we can change people's minds and show them that the Republican Party isn't this racist, terrible thing that the left says about us, because they know if they instill fear in them, they'll never trust or listen to us. And rather, that we're the party that wants to help them the most with economic opportunities, jobs, liberties, constitutional rights, and a better tomorrow for everyone, regardless of what you look like or what background you have. And that's quite honestly the truth. And you can't back down, because until they realize that on their own, you need to be as strong as possible in your ideas. And that doesn't mean you have to be like the amazing Bill and Aaron here that I'm talking to, or like myself, and go out
that.
And talk about this weekly and be out there and outspoken. Sometimes it's as simple as talking to your neighbors, talking to your family, you know, talking to your church and telling them we need to get more involved if we believe in these biblical views. Little things or big things, but you play your part, and that's how we can change and fix America.
Yeah. Well, you're right, because the biggest danger with people who would agree with us on these types of things is that they're sitting back and going, it doesn't matter. there's voter fraud. The left is just going to stuff the ballot box or whatever whatever their thing is, and then they say, it doesn't matter, I'm not going to vote. And
yeah, no. You need to be involved.
Yeah, which is why we still have Gavin Newsom. I mean, yeah. They signed the petitions to put the recall on the ballot, but then they didn't go to the ballot box to vote. And then I have a lot of people who turn around and say, well, they cheated. And I'm like, well, did you vote? Well, no, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Like, how hard do they have to cheat if you don't actually vote?
Right. Even if you believe that the cheating occurred and there's a lot of evidence that say it did happen, at least in many parts of America.
Yeah, no argument.
It wasn't ballot harvesting necessarily. It wasn't because they threw away your vote. In California,
but go make them cheat.
Vote, and you can track it online. And if something happens, contact the right people, contact the voter register office, contact your GOP office, and they'll find out. And you might even be helping us get closer to a better, more safe and legitimate election.
Well, I found out a couple of weeks ago that the California GOP has attorneys in all 58 counties that will be watching for election problems. And I thought, wow, well, that's something that's not being talked about.
Yeah, go vote, track it. Something suspicious comes up, give them a call. And that's how we can do our part and hopefully have some very good outcomes in California at the local and statewide level.
Well, I've always felt that the Hispanic community was the most aligned with American values.
I would agree so. I'm a little biased, but I would agree so.
Yeah, I mean, well, when you come down to the basic things, they're culturally, right? Culturally, I don't know. Most of us are we're Catholics. A lot of the Hispanic community is Catholic. So these are people who don't believe in abortion. These are people who believe in helping the poor, but not just giving everything away. I mean, they have a good work ethic, they real strong family, all these things. And it's never made any sense to me that would be a strong, strong arm of the left. That's
absolutely.
This is always like, what are they telling these people that's convincing them to join?
I have to thank you both very much for not calling us Latinx. Because
calling you what?
If you're Latinx. I'm not sure if you've heard of that.
I don't understand the X stuff. I'm kind of X stupid.
I don't understand myself, and I'm supposed to identify it as it, apparently.
What does it mean?
So I thank you for not calling us the made-up leftist names and acronyms they make for us.
Well, but what is a Latinx? What does that mean?
I've heard two different theories. One of them is that it's for Latinos who don't identify fully as American but don't identify fully as where their parents come from.
Oh, yeah. It's identification. I should have known. Well, I'm double-minded.
Yeah, and the other thing is it's a queer-inclusive, LGBTQ-inclusive
that's true.
Rewording of the word Latina or Latino.
Yeah, I don't really get that.
The Adams of the world and such.
Well,
does not use it, believe me. It's only used by white elitists in the university systems, white leftists, and some misguided leftist Latinos.
Yeah. We don't really even know those people, so.
and
we don't spend our time of feeding the bears, so we don't allow those people to come on and talk to us, so we don't learn anything from them either.
Yeah, they're all around us. At my university, they have a Latinx center.
Oh, brother. God bless you and your work. We're really happy to have you on today. It's been fun. And for all the people out there, you know, around the country and outside the country, it's always good to know that everything isn't what you think it is, you know. So keep up the good work. We really appreciate you.
Yes, thank you. No, we have to remain hopeful in God. America has stormed many battles and waters before, and we will continue to do so with great people.
Absolutely.
Just doing their part, getting out to vote, and helping to fight America in their own little way every day.
Amen. And thank you very much for your service in the military. And Marcos, if you have any other people who are just not getting any airtime and have a good message, you send them to us. We'd love to hear from
Absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely.
Thank you
so much, Aaron and Bill. God bless.
Thanks for coming on.
All right, coming back with Sheriff Mike Johnson. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
news this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. Enough specialty infant formula for more than a half million baby bottles arriving in the U.S. from Europe. Several flights are coming in over the weekend to relieve the deepening nationwide shortage. White House planning for, quote, dire contingencies that could include rationing supplies of vaccines and treatments this fall if Congress does not approve more money for fighting COVID-19. White House coronavirus coordinator Dr. Ashish Jha has painted a rather bleak picture in which the U.S. could be forced to cede many of the advances made against the virus over the last 2 years.
We also are planning for a variety of scenarios, including a wave of infection this fall and winter, and making sure that we have a new generation of vaccines that are being worked on right now, that we have availability of treatments and testing, and we have the resources.
He was speaking on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos. Also at townhall.com, a research fellow at the Heritage Foundation says there are a handful of ways Congress can curb inflation. Joel Griffith suggesting that Democratic lawmakers in particular stop their federal spending spree.
Well, over the past few years, Congress has spent $6 trillion above and beyond what they normally spend. That's about $100,000 per family in the United States. And virtually all of that money has been borrowed or even worse, has been printed.
Griffith speaking with the Salem Radio Network, and he adds consumer prices last year rose 8.6%. That's the highest inflation since 1981. Authorities in New York City say a man has opened fire on a moving subway train Sunday morning, at least wounding one other person, the suspect still at large. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Dr. Gorka here, and I want to talk to you for a minute about 100% drug-free Relief Factor. I've been taking Relief Factor for years now to help me deal with pain in my body. My wife takes it as well. The reason we tell everyone we know about it is simple. We found it really works to help our bodies fight off the inflammation that causes aches and pains. Whether it's the pain of injuries you've sustained or just the natural pains from the mileage over the years, Relief Factor can help. I've never looked back. Almost 70% of the more than 500,000 people who have tried Relief Factor end up ordering more. That's because it works for them the way it works for me. Isn't it time for you to get out of pain? Your first step to becoming pain-free should be to order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF to find out more about this offer. That's relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. Feel the difference.
Two more defendants pleading guilty for a multi-million-dollar scheme to manipulate the Amazon Marketplace e-commerce platform.
Six people have been charged in the conspiracy, which federal prosecutors say involved paying bribes to get Amazon employees and contractors to leak confidential data and to use that data to grant certain sellers a competitive advantage on Amazon Marketplace. Joseph Nielsen and Kristen Lasis, both of New York, entered their pleas in U.S. District Court in Seattle, acknowledging they paid more than $100,000 in bribes from 2016 to 2020.
In Wisconsin, a couple have killed a bear that attacked them in their home. Both were injured before they were able to stab the bear with a kitchen knife. The man also grabbed a gun and eventually killed the animal. Breaking news and analysis, townhall.com. In Venezuela, auto mechanics there busy trying to keep a little more life into a number of aging vehicles. Ron DeRockstra explains why.
The country's new car market's collapsed and few can afford a better used one. Industry officials say Venezuela produced only 8 trucks last year, nary a single car, and imports aren't filling the gap. At the century's peak, some 172,000 vehicles rolled out of domestic plants. Only 1,886 new light vehicles were sold in Venezuela last year, and years of hyperinflation obliterated much of the middle class that could once dream of at least a used car. Ron DeRockster reporting.
In Maryland, 27 people have been injured in a bus crash not far from Baltimore. Police say of those 27, 15 have been taken to a hospital. No other vehicles involved in that crash. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the second half of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located up at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake. Anything John Deere, go up and talk to them. If they don't have it, they can get it. I think they have, Pape has 44 now Ag and Turf stores, so they got lots of inventory to draw from. So go up and see them.
Taking over the world.
Yes, they are. Go up and see them or give them a call. Their phone number is 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
We need to find a little song for that to play it in the background.
A little ditty?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
I like that Man with a Tractor song, but it's got words. I'll find something. Okay. So we're shifting gears. We talked about Hispanic conservatives in the first hour, and if you missed that, I hope you'll catch the commercial-free archive that Robert will have up later. He's out riding his bike, so he's back in.
Bicycle. Bicycle.
I know we should play this. I've got that other one, that Fat Bottom Girls one that I like a lot. I have some bikes in that one, too. We won't play that, though. The sheriff's here, so.
Yeah, behave yourself.
We don't want to mess up his cut here. Sheriff Mike Johnson is here. We're during election season, but it's always fun to talk to the sheriff because, you know, well, we know they're into everything and there's tons of stuff going on. But, he was born and raised in Gilroy.
Gilroy, California.
The home. If you've ever had garlic, it came from Gilroy.
You know where garlic
mm-hmm.
is, right?
More than likely. And you drive through there and the truck's hauling that stuff and it's just...
I love that smell.
Like you just go nose blind.
Yeah.
Like it's only... It's just garlic everywhere. Let's see. You worked in a lumber mill. They have lumber mills in Gilroy?
Yeah, it's more of a lumber yard. We had a couple mills as far as the resaw machine, a planer, and some other stuff, but it was also a contractor yard. So, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
sure did. It's
fun.
Closed down now, like a lot of them, but yeah.
I was going to ask you if it was still
there.
But
I worked there from the time I was 13 till the time I was about 19, 21 years old.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it's kind of fun. We don't usually have people in the studio, so here we read their bio every sentence. We're like, is that real? Is that how it works? Let's see, what else did you do? You did a whole bunch of stuff. Built custom homes. You were a carpenter. You worked. You went back to school. You've got a lot of school things. Let's see. Oh, you went to Humboldt State. Humboldt State.
Yeah.
Yeah, where the men are men and the women are too.
That's how I ended up in living in Eureka for about 17 years. Is Humboldt State brought me there.
That's how I wound up there, Humboldt State.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody. I was. We had moved from Connecticut to the Bay Area, and wow, that was a cultural switch.
Yeah, what a cultural shock that moving was, to Humboldt. Period was. For
well,
me
when we moved to from Connecticut to Walnut Creek, it was like, okay, I don't know what's going on with these people, but I don't want to go wherever they're going.
Right.
So I kind of did an informal survey, and no one was going to Humboldt State. That was like the one school no one was applying for, and I thought...
Which makes total sense.
Yeah.
So what do? I'm definitely going there. And then I got there. I was like, oh, I might have overcorrected.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, I played basketball up there, and it was a fun place to live. There was lots to do.
It's a great area.
It is. It's super pretty.
As far as the rivers and the forests and everything up there, it's awesome.
And you want to go hike a... Anything. Like, you know, you want to hike the dunes. Oh, were you there when they had the kinetic sculpture races and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
I was on the shark, and I was on the pencil.
Pencil.
I was really strong. I was a weightlifter, and I worked at a restaurant, and so the pencil guys came in, and they were like, could you be on it? Because I had, like, really big arms. They were like, could you be on our team? I'm like, you just want me because I have muscles. That was the most fun, though, those kinetic sculpture races. I don't know. We used to do a bunch of stuff. Now it's all turned to dope, which we'll talk about soon. Okay, so more. We've got to move forward. So you had a bachelor's degree. You went to the Department of Fish and Game? You went
I did.
To Fun and Games for a while?
Well, this is what brought me to Humboldt.
I didn't know that.
Is, I had intended on becoming a fish and game warden, and that's what I was kind of focused on. That's why I got a biology degree, wildlife management.
That makes sense.
And I went to the Napa Fish and Game Academy, which is a regular post Peace Officer Standards and Training Academy. They just add on an additional 4 weeks of fish and wildlife, fish and game specific training.
I did not know that.
Yep.
Well, that's kind of fun. And then you were with the Eureka Police Department, so you
right?
So you ditched fishing game and you said, I'm just going to do regular crime.
Well, no, actually, it wasn't. My senior year of college at Humboldt State, I took a leave of absence. I went to that fishing game academy. I came back to Humboldt State. I graduated. And during that time, I applied with the state to be a fish and game warden. And I tested really well. I was in the first ranking. That's how they do it. But the state is so slow, and it was taking forever. So I graduated college, and I was poor.
And, like, needed a job.
I needed a job.
Yeah.
So
I've got my paper.
I got tired of waiting, so I applied for Eureka Police Department. And lo and behold, I got hired. And it turns out I was pretty good at being a cop, and I liked doing the street law enforcement stuff. So when Fish and Game came around, the first job they offered me was in Carlsbad, which I didn't want to move down south. Yeah. And then I just took my name off the list because I was enjoying what I was doing. I said, yeah, I'd rather just stick with law enforcement.
You're like, oh, this will turn out to be a pretty good gig.
Yeah.
So you were 96. I was already gone. So
96, right.
I
had several
then.
Positions for Eureka. They were really good to me. I was on the SWAT team. I handled a couple of narcotics canines, and I was attached to the drug task force for a while. I was with the problem.
Which always has so much to do over there.
Yeah, yeah.
So much to do.
I did a lot of things. Youth mentoring. I mean, I held a lot of positions in that agency.
You did evidence technician.
Yep. Evidence technician. I did crime scene investigation. I had a lot of different specialties while I was there. It was fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
That's a really good way, though, to look at all the different aspects because,
Well, when you work in a city like Eureka, and probably a lot of people don't know this about Eureka, but Eureka is, God, it's problems, and you go to
it's worse now, but
serious calls all the time there, and so you get a lot of exposure, and you get a lot of streetwise training working for an agency that is like that. So, to my benefit for my career, I was exposed to a lot and got a lot of investigative training and a lot of major crimes type of investigations. It was fun.
Was Frank Yeager still there?
Frank Yeager was still there, yes.
I love Frank Yeager. Yeah. I had to look him up in my phone. I'm like, Frank, oh, what's his name?
Yeah, Frank Yeager.
His daughter was in my Girl Scout troop.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
when I was
there,
Frank...
police chief, right?
Frank was a coroner when I was there.
Oh?
And then he was also on city council when I was there.
Frank was a great guy. I really liked him a lot.
Yeah, good guy.
Wow, that's funny. Like, you came there and I had just, like, escaped.
No, funny.
But we knew the
same
thing.
Well, I escaped, too.
Yeah, and then we all left. Well, then I came here, and I had no idea it was so hot here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just came here, and it's Christmas time. And then it started getting hotter and hotter and hotter. I thought, oh, my God.
It's brutally hot here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a dry heat.
If you live 2 miles from the sun, you got to expect it to get hot, I guess. But, wow, who knew?
And then you
went to the FBI Academy.
You taught at CHP at the academy there. What did you do there?
So I went through their training as what it's called DRE, drug recognition expert. Mm-hmm. So I went through their training and became a drug recognition expert, and I did a lot of that in Eureka, and I was doing so much of that and writing search warrants and everything based off of that, that they ended up sending me to their instructor training. So I became a drug recognition expert instructor. And so part of that was I was attached and I would teach that at their academy as well as different places up and down the state.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
And then FBI. How'd you get that?
Yeah. I actually feel a little bit bad about this because Eureka sent me to the FBI Academy.
Oh, and they ditched him?
With the intention of looking at promoting me. I went to that academy, and I did that training. I came back, and I was at Eureka, I don't know, just several months after that. And then I got the offer to be the chief of police in Ione, in Amador County. And so I ended up leaving and going to Amador.
Hmm.
Yeah. But FBI Academy, great. I mean, talk about great
training. Oh, that's gotta be great training, yeah.
Incredible, yeah. So I lived over there basically for that, I think it was 16-week period. That I went to that academy.
Well, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
So you've kind of been there and done that.
Yeah, I've.
So of all the things, if you had to do something you had done before, if you had to go back in time and you could only pick the things you had done, no new stuff, if you had to pick one and do it for a long time, what would you pick?
You mean which of the specialties?
Like all those different things.
The best job I've ever had in law enforcement is being a sergeant and working a canine narcotics
dog. I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah.
Because so I always thought that looked really awesome.
I got to be a sergeant and work a dog at the same time. And the best job. I would go
it's
back
got
and
dogs
stick
in
with
it.
That.
Yeah. How could you go wrong?
Well, you know, the dog's never mad at you. You could be having the worst day with your spouse or your family or whatever it is.
Other people.
The other people. You get in that car and that dog's just happy to see you.
Well, plus, when you're the canine guy, you don't have to put the criminals in the back seat, do you?
No.
Yeah,
no.
That's great.
But
you never
I would
have
haul
to transport
in the front,
them?
I would transport my own in the front seat. I built a cage in my front seat so I wouldn't inconvenience the other guys and gals I was working
or
with.
Or the dog, because the dog's obviously got his whole deal
going
on in the back
is,
seat.
The funny thing is my dogs that I worked were both labs. One was a black lab, one was a yellow lab. Oh. And they're just your typical Labrador that love to retrieve and goofy, happy, friendly as heck. Wouldn't hurt a fly, but I taught both of those dogs to bark on command because I worked graveyard. So when the bad guys would see my canine unit rolling up, I'd have the dog start barking. They can't see in there.
Right.
I think I've got a man-eater in the back of the car.
You have a lab.
I have a lab, a goofy lab. But everybody's attitude and demeanor would change as that car pulls
up. Oh,
that's
funny.
Yeah.
Gosh, I pull up to the office, and I have a couple of schnauzers in the back. But, you know, nobody seems to really – and they're barking like hell. I don't see anybody flinch.
When you have a black and white,
I need to get a different car.
They just assume
that's
it's a shepherd.
That's my problem.
Or
I got a white, not a black and white.
Right.
Yeah, my father was CHP forever, and he always told me that about the canine guys. When they showed up, criminals took on a totally different
demeanor.
Yeah, it's like they'd stand up to the biggest, toughest cop on the beat, but if guy showed up with a dog. They're down.
Uh-huh.
They don't want to get bit.
It is so true. It changes behaviors just like that.
Yep.
And again, you know, they don't know it. I have a lab barking in the back of my car. But.
That's pretty funny. But kind of a biggish dog bark is a biggish dog bark.
Yeah, exactly.
That's interesting, you know, because the canine guys, they love being canine guys.
It's a great job.
It seems like that's like the best of both worlds. Yeah. Plus, you know, let's face it. If, you know, you see them on TV. It's like the best part of those shows, you know. It's like, release the dog. Let the dog go. Because the dog runs through the bushes and through the water. And, you know, the guy, they can always outrun people.
Yeah.
But, man, you're not going to outrun,
and so
you're not gonna outrun a dog.
For years, so I was running that unit and a handler. And so I sent myself to agitator school, so, you know, to wear the bite suit and take the bites from the dog.
Oh, that's what they call it, a bite suit?
Yeah.
The big puffy thing? Okay.
It's kind of a...
That'd be scary.
One of those adrenaline addictions.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun. I mean, you get bruised up and bit up, but even in that suit, but it's kind of fun.
Yeah, dogs, those big dogs are not to mess with. They grab a hold of you. They throw their whole body into it.
Oh, yeah.
How do they decide? Like, I know all departments don't have a canine unit. Are they real expensive? Is that why? Or
well, I mean, it's expensive to get up and running with a dog and a team and a car and all the equipment and all that. Yeah. But if you really put it in perspective, the cost of getting a dog with a guy and opposed to getting another personnel, it's way cheaper, and it kind of doubles your manpower. So for the sheriff's department, you know, it would be great if we could get to the point where we had resident deputies again and we'd put a dog with the resident deputies because that kind of doubles your manpower out in the rural
area. That
makes sense. Gives you some backup.
So when you roll up on a call, I would imagine other deputies are happy to see a canine show
always.
Up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, you could send them in to dark buildings and, you know, they're not putting themselves on the line.
That's what they're for. They're a tool, and they're,
exactly.
You know, to save lives and protect the handlers and the citizens as well. And sometimes they put those dogs in right in harm's way, but that's why we have them.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's pretty amazing.
Okay, transitioning to sheriff.
Okay.
Okay, so, well, you know what? We shouldn't gloss over Anderson PD, though.
No.
We have like a minute till the break, but you were at Anderson PD for how long?
9 years as chief of police.
Because when I moved here from Eureka, I moved to Anderson.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah. And
what year was that?
It was before you got there.
Okay.
How about that?
Okay.
Because, yeah, it was like, okay, I need to leave here.
Yeah.
Right away.
Yeah, Anderson was
right away. What is happening? Actually, a mean, sad little joke was, you know, if hell had a zip code, it would be 96007. And that was kind of how it was at that time.
It was.
Because I thought, oh, it's a cute little town. It just, like, needs a little help. Oh, wow. Well, I was diligent, but not that diligent. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to flee the scene. So I did. But then you have the most interesting thing to me is if you look at the Zillow housing listings, it used to be if you had an Anderson zip code, your home value was significantly lower. That is no longer the case.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That's a really measurable – talk about crime and all that stuff all day long. But when you look at what does that really mean, the people who live there, their property values have gone up dramatically.
That's taken a whole different look, too, when you drive through Anderson. I mean,
well, you have that, but, I mean, the same house, like, you know, see houses come up, and you look and you go, oh, you know, 500-some-odd thousand. You think, oh, I wonder where that is. Anderson, thinking, okay, years ago, that would never have happened.
And it's a perfect example of how a community, a administration and a police department and a fire, public safety all together can come together and change the face of a community if everybody's got a shared vision and on the same page. Really proud of the turnaround in Anderson.
Yeah. Let's take a break. And I want to pick that up tomorrow. I got a couple more questions.
I was looking for a song.
Anderson.
I didn't want to just go with the old cops theme.
No.
Although I was going to do that, but I found something else.
Bad Boys? You're missing that?
Yeah, we talked about it, so now I'm over it now.
Okay.
All right, we'll be right here. Travis and they're laughing. He's over it too. We'll be right back. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Convert your calling into a career at Shasta College this summer. Get a jump start on being transfer ready or boost your current career skills quickly and affordably with a certificate or degree. Our summer sessions offer flexible class times and formats with online and some in-person offerings. Plan a cool summer of hot classes by enrolling at Shasta College today. Summer session classes begin June 13th. Achieve more, earn more at shastacollege.edu. Enroll online today.
The pandemic has taken a toll on our country.
The Dow plunging hundreds of points, its worst showing of the year.
A shaky economy, financial strain, all made worse by politicians trying to take advantage.
California, New York, a lot of the blue states where businesses are really struggling to find people. And so what can they do?
Homelessness, rising crime, constitutional rights infringed upon by shutting down schools, churches, and small businesses.
There's a lot going on in the economy. There's a lot of uncertainty at the kitchen table.
Now is the time to stand up for community. Now is the time to move people forward.
I'm Kevin Cry. I'm not a politician. I'm a lifelong Shasta resident, and I don't recognize what our community has become. I'm running to lead with backbone. I'll prioritize public safety and make our community more affordable.
Our local leaders have let us down. We can do better.
Let's bring the North State back.
Paid for by committee to elect Kevin Cry, Shasta County Supervisor, District 1.
Retirement may seem to be in the distant future, or it may suddenly arrive overnight. At Stifel Investments, we are committed to working closely with our clients. Planning tomorrow means understanding the challenges of today. Uncertain markets, rising costs, and longer lifespans. As a financial advisor of 25 years, I'm committed to helping my clients achieve retirement success. Let's get started today. This is Susan Eastman, Stifel Nicholas & Company, 244-7199.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
So much snazzier than, you know, your basic bad boys, bad boys. We all know that one.
Oh, yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Doesn't mean we're not going to use it. Okay.
Okay.
So you upped the ante in Anderson.
Yep.
And you did some really kind of, I thought it was pretty clever because let's face facts, there is not a town in California, at least, and really not in a lot of our states anymore, that doesn't have drug problem, homeless problem,
yep,
all that stuff. And so you guys came up with some pretty innovative solutions. So you had to have the city council on board.
Yes, you did. We had to have everybody.
You had
to
have all the pieces.
Right. So putting in the probably key to the turn in the community and getting these things done was the sales tax that we passed. And that, getting that through was a big deal. And I was instrumental in helping that because I had the experience from Eureka. I was on the Police Officers Association when I was in Eureka, and we helped get a sales tax and move a sales tax forward through Eureka. And that was set up a little different. It has a sunset clause and different things, but
Was that specifically for law enforcement?
Yes. The politics of getting it through is the same. And so we worked together. And, again, that was the city administration, the city council, public safety, all worked together to get that sales tax through. And once that came through and passed, then there was some money to actually do some of the programs that we wanted to do to fund additional police officers and to be that aggressive and proactive law enforcement that the community needed to start cleaning it up. Now, there were some other things that went in place with that, and I'll give you an example. So we passed an ordinance where if we take you to jail and we take your stuff, and this is what happens at most law enforcement agencies, we have to book in your property for safekeeping.
Yeah, I love this
part. When you go to jail. So I did a whole perspective study on what it cost for the officer to time to book it in, the property clerk's time to store it, the front office gal's time to research it, pull it back out, and return it. And so we made it that it was $25 to $50 an item for everything we had to book in of yours to get it back. And one thing the criminals have that's better than any of us is a communication network. They communicate well.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what. Before, it doesn't matter how sophisticated or not, they communicate well. So what happened was people learned that if you get arrested in Anderson, you're basically not going to get your stuff back unless you have a wad of cash to pay for to get your stuff back. And it's effective because then they start staying outside of our city limits. And the other thing that they found out was we will arrest you and book you in jail for minor misdemeanor crimes. We don't care. That's our job is to do that.
Enforce the law,
And not overlook that. So what's happening is you had the men and women that are working the streets, a change in philosophy from me, and it was, look, I want you to go out and find them. I want you to look for the criminals before they victimize our citizens, before they break into cars, before they break into houses. Find them out there riding on the bike without a light. Find them in possession of burglary tools or a bag of dope in their pocket.
You see these guys sometimes, and even as a civilian, you go,
exactly.
Guys up to something.
And what happened was we were driving right by those guys before, and we were a reactive department where we were just waiting for a call to come in. We'd go take the report, turn in the report, and just wait for the next one. So we changed that to a proactive police department, an aggressive police department, where we went out there and looked for that. So all those things started coming together, and over time, you start to make a difference because then you start partnering with your business community, with your residents in your neighborhoods. You start connecting up the neighborhood watches. Mm-hmm. So we're communicating now.
Well, neighborhood watch then has somebody who's really listening, and they have somebody to partner with, so it's kind of worth doing at that point.
Exactly.
And who doesn't want who wants their neighborhood to have marauders in it?
Right. The dynamics with all that have changed. People are super involved and busy in their own lives and stuff they got going on. I went to a training years and years ago, which I found very interesting. I can't remember who the instructor was or the seminar was, but he said that one of the things that changed America more than the internet was the advent of the garage door opener. He said because people leave, they shut their door, you know, by a button, they shut their door, they go to work. When they get home, pop open the garage, they pull in, it closes, they're not talking to their neighbors anymore.
Yeah.
They're not out in front of their house. And it's just changed the dynamics of neighborhoods. And I thought it was a really interesting perspective. And when you think of that on top of the internet and everything else that's going on and two job working families.
Well, kind of
and,
how we set up our neighborhoods too. Like, I know that they do that in some places where they put the garages on the back. And so the front is all people, like, because I walk the dogs all the time.
Yep.
So when I walk our dogs, I know what everybody's doing. I'm Helen Kravitz. you have no idea.
Well, and also, I mean,
people tell you stuff.
Every criminal has a cell phone. You pick them up, and you got to book their cell phone into property.
Yep.
Thanks
to Obama. They got an Obama phone.
But like, if
they're
going
to pay to get their phone back, they're only going to do that a couple of times, and let's get out of here. Let's go somewhere.
Well, we had stuff going on in our neighborhood, which is weird because it's like a little loop. And if you think about like the letter P, you know, the homeless people should travel along the spine of the P, not down the long way. I mean, they're not out getting exercise.
Right.
So it's like, why were they going around the other part? That made no sense. And so I'm out walking the dog and, you know, people, hey, how's it going? I go, you know, what's going on? Like, yeah, you know what? I saw that. So we all started comparing notes. Well, it turned out one of the ladies in the neighborhood had gone kind of cuckoo. And she was letting a bunch of homeless people stay in her house.
And they communicate just like I told you. So next thing you know, you have 10 or 12 of them.
Well, all of a sudden we had a guy with a backpack, and then we had like a drug kit in somebody's driveway.
Some
and we had all this weird stuff.
With a bunch of stuff, yeah. Well,
because I'm friendly, I had the phone number of the landlord. So I was like, by the way, you have a problem in your house down the street from me. And that got switched. But it was bad because they were going through people's vehicles and there was all sorts of stuff like that going on. Yeah. And the only way we figured it out was by, the
internal talking.
We could have called the police all day, but how would they know who's inside the houses?
Right.
Yep.
Interesting.
Uh-huh.
So, okay, so moving to the sheriff's office.
Okay.
That's a whole different can of worms, but it's very similar.
Well, you know, law enforcement is law enforcement, and sheriff's office is very different from municipal police, which is where I worked before, right? So, but the core of law enforcement is the same. I mean, our job is to protect your property, your life, and your constitutional rights, and that doesn't matter.
And you're building a team of people who are under a lot of stress all the time.
Exactly.
And now with all the stuff that's going on in the world, you know, that people, you know, I don't know, so up here it's not that bad, but,
well,
you know.
It's law enforcement. Law enforcement is a very stressful job, and it's really taxing on the families of law enforcement. So, you know, that's what I bring to the sheriff's office is 14 years of executive law enforcement experience, where I've had two agencies now that I've had to turn around. Both of them had their host of problems when I walked into them. Now I'm coming into the sheriff's office. We all know that there's been problems in there and they've needed some change. And I am that change that people have been looking for. And we have, really come together. I've got the Deputy Sheriff's Association, which, you know, unanimously endorsed me, as well as the Administration Association. I've got my allied agencies supporting me. We're making the change that has needed to be made, and we're coming together as a group. Morale's good. Things are happening. We are, you know, we're doing marijuana enforcement on a large scale right now without an actual marijuana enforcement team yet. We're
'cause that's an actual thing.
That's an actual thing.
The marijuana, because they call them the MET unit, right?
Correct.
Is the marijuana enforcement team.
Marijuana
and
eradication
that is,
team.
Oh, eradication team.
Yeah.
Right.
Enforcement.
It's another
people
E word.
Go back and forth. Doesn't matter.
So how many people are on that?
I have zero on that.
But I mean, in
I
real life.
I have one guy right now that we have selected that hopefully when the budget passes in July and we get a funded for a full-time team, we'll have up to probably 4 to 5 people on that team. Maybe even up to 8, not just of my folks, but allied agencies in it as well.
Sure.
But right now, since I was appointed in August of 2021, promised that I would start working on it immediately because we had gone 6 years without a marijuana team in this county. And within 2 weeks of being appointed, we started and we did our first operation. And we've done about 47 operations now to date. And it's with guys and gals on overtime. Now, I don't even have a unit. They will sign up.
If you have a unit, is that all they do? Or are they kind of deputies part of the time in regular, and then they're always marijuana?
They will be dedicated full-time to marijuana eradication. Yes, they will.
Now, will they still have – do you still do the property seizures on these drug busts? Is that something that –
Yeah, we haven't been since we've been doing it because we don't have a team. We can't do that big of an investigation. We've just been going in and ripping it out.
They call it a rip and run.
Rip and run. Yeah. We've been doing that. We take people to jail when we catch them in there, but we haven't been doing in-depth investigations because I don't have the staff
right.
to do it.
Okay.
So what we will do, what we're planning to do is when we get this team in place, is we're going to run a parallel investigation. So they'll have a criminal investigation going, and we're going to have a code enforcement investigation going, which is a civil one. So the county has an ordinance right now that it's $10,000 a day if you are illegally growing marijuana. That's the fine.
And so, to be clear, illegally growing marijuana is anything over 6 plants that is outdoors.
Correct.
Okay.
And also, to be perfectly clear, we're talking large-scale, high.
You're not running around looking over fences for 7 plants, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So what we plan to do is run that parallel investigation. So let's say on May 1st, we go flying grows because that's what we do. We fly in the air. We map out all these grows that we can establish. And then we come back on May 10th and serve the search warrant on one of these places. So now I can prove for 10 days there's been a grow there at $10,000 a day.
Okay.
And now I can lien the property or go after the property owner or whoever it is to pay that. And what I hope will happen as we do these, it'll start self-funding the marijuana unit,
right.
The operation.
Well, so the fines, obviously you don't make laws, you enforce them. So the fines are set at the Board of Supervisors level or the state level?
The Board of Supervisors level. Those are county ordinances.
Okay.
Yeah, so the...
And there are limits, statewide limits on what they can do, you know.
Yeah,
because people will say, well, they should charge them.
Yeah.
You know, they'll come up with, like, crazy numbers. And it's like, well, we've made rules about that just in case someone loses their mind.
Exactly. There's parameters they have to work within for sure. So to do that, though, see, that's a perfect example of where I need somebody from the code enforcement part of the county.
It's just like
and attach
your...
them to our team so they can do that aspect of it because it's complicated enough for our guys to run the criminal investigation.
And we don't have that now in this county?
We have a code enforcement officer or two, but...
But not for that.
No.
So tell me this. Are there counties that do have this system in place? I know everybody's cobbling something together.
Yes.
But is there anybody who you're like, oh, if I could just wake up and
model
be
it after
those guys, I would be like in, you know.
Well, I would say, I'd tell you, kind of. There's different counties I've been looking at that have aspects of what I like of this program and some other things. So I'm trying to take the best of each example that I've seen and make it.
Because everybody with the rural counties dealing with the same stuff.
Exactly. I mean, Siskiyou and Humboldt are two of our partners who have some sort of that going on already.
Sure. And, okay, so since we're in the marijuana thing, the commercial, like in this county, they've decided not to green light commercial growing.
Right.
Out on county property.
Right.
So you can't just go out there and put up your giant greenhouse and grow tons of this. For the counties that are thinking, hey, it would be a great idea for us to greenlight commercial growing, like Lassen County.
Didn't Humboldt County do that too?
Was thinking about it just when you talk to other sheriffs. How's that gone for them?
Not well. Not well at all.
So turning it into a legal business hasn't gotten rid of the crime?
No, and
that's so weird.
I don't know if you've been following the politics now on that, but these legal businesses that have stood these up are finding that it's not so easy to run a legal business.
Legal business is a pain. You have a lot of rules.
And now the
a lot of paperwork.
Our great governor is looking to bail them out and try to give them some sort of incentive or tax break or something so they can help them along.
Because that's totally what the taxpayers want. We want to bail out marijuana businesses
because
restaurants are closing everywhere.
Like
we don't need
them.
All
the other businesses don't need that help.
Let's
just give it to the marijuana crowd.
Yeah, because that makes...
So Humboldt went to commercial, didn't they?
They went to everything.
I think so.
Well, let's face it, the whole time. I mean, and since the beginning of time, they've been growing dope over there.
Yeah, right.
I talked to the sheriff over there and one of the board of supervisors, and apparently those places are banning their businesses left and right because they're finding out it's not...
They can't make any money.
It's not lucrative.
Right.
Legal.
Well, unless it's a... Unless it's a little marriage of convenience where you have your legal business is buying the illegal dope, so then you do make a ton of money because it's not, you know. But the people who are buying from those stores are not getting what they think they're getting, which is some sort of organic product,
The unfortunate part about that is just what you're saying, and I don't mean to cast this on every business out there because I know it's not every business, but a lot of those collectives and dispensaries are being supplied,
of course,
with black market marijuana.
Of course. Sure. And anybody who wants to read about what's in it or see pictures or anything, please go to the website, look at the pot tab, because we are notorious pot haters and have done a ton of shows on that. And okay. So bottom line is, if it's made from the cannabis plant, whether it's CBD, hemp, or marijuana, it all gives you cancer. It's increased the incidence of childhood cancer 49%. And all you have to do is go out in one of these illegal grows, look at the spray adhesive, the carbofuran, and the other chemicals that go on it, and you go, that makes perfect sense.
Is that good for you?
Yeah, it's super good. It falls off right before you smoke it. All that stuff comes off.
Oh, is that how it works?
Yep. All the chemicals, they go right away because they're not organic. So all you do is you give it the old, you wave your magic organic wand over it, and
it's
boom,
organic.
Problem solved.
Yeah.
It's like when we were kids and we played jail. You know, we had a jail because... Yeah. You know, you're playing some game, you want to lock the other kids up, but you didn't have time to build a jail. So you drew a little line, and you tick-a-lock meant you were in the jail. Can't get out.
Uh-huh. is that how it works for the
That's how it works for the marijuana. You just give it the equivalent of tick-a-lock, and
I'm
then you're out.
You cleared that up for us.
Yeah. So
you don't need to hire any new guys. That's stupid.
So don't worry. Yeah. Got that handled.
It's the old Ryan tick-a-lock. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and if you can't get enough, you can find this commercial free later today at wethepeopleradio.us.
I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Fidelia. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man.
Hi, friends. This is RC with Tobacco and Brew. This month's cigar of the humidor is Jaime Garcia Reserva Especial, using only the finest dark, oily broadleaf Maduro wrappers paired with a rich blend of Nicaraguan long filler tobaccos. This is a stick on the full side. An effortless draw brings out the wonderfully layered notes of espresso, black pepper, and cedar. Jaime Garcia Reserva Especial, Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance is now open at 3673 Eureka Way. Physical therapists Kevin Elo and Rachel Lang have a combined 29 years of experience in helping those who've suffered orthopedic injuries, strains, and sprains. Kevin has worked with the USA Gymnastics team, NFL Combine, and professional BMX riders. He's also helped members of Cirque du Soleil get back into action. Rachel works closely with seniors and is also a group fitness instructor and adept at returning people to an active lifestyle. Both Kevin and Rachel at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance are accepting new clients. Give them a call today, 530-533-5030. If you are in need of physical therapy, talk to the experts at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance at 3673 Eureka Way. Call 530-533-5030. That's 530-533-5030 today.
Woke up this morning, what did I see? A big black cloud hanging over me. I switched on the radio and nearly dropped dead. The news was so bad that I fell out of bed. It was a gas strike, oil strike, lorry strike, a fed strike. Gotta be a Superman.
Yeah. Actually, that song kind of fits all of us, but, you know, I figure, hey, if you're going to be the sheriff, you got to be Superman, right? Because everyone wants you to fix everything yesterday.
Exactly, yep.
So not to gloss out of the over and out of the marijuana thing, but I think it's worth noting that since we're having an election on the 7th of June, so if this airs after that, it's all still good information, but your opponent, John Green, I remember when we've talked about this before, I'll post it online, post it on the page for today, that our previous sheriff, Tom Pasenko, had told me back in 2018, he was like, just like blown away. He goes, my opponent, like, took money from a pot collective for his campaign. He's like, what kind of madness is that? And I said, well, it's a good thing he's not going to win, and we went about our lives, and Tom got reelected, and now Tom lives in Idaho. But when Mr. Green came back and was running against you, I thought, well, I'm going to call Tom, find out what that whole pot money thing was all about, because that is ridiculous. I cannot think in a world where you intend to enforce law how you could be supported by the marijuana industry at any level, and I don't care what level, how you could be supported by that and enforce the law. And, I mean, that's kind of like being a little pregnant or with just a little cartel money, or, I mean, how does that work? You can't do that. So I looked on his 460 filings. So for those of you who don't look up campaign finance, the filing is a 460, and I'll post it so you can look at it. Don't believe me. But it's right on there. And it was tricky, too. It was TW space TME. And it's like, huh. All the other people were like, you know, Mary Smith and Betty Jones and Hal Sawshop and I don't know, whatever, a bunch of stuff. And there were three, if I remember right, there were three $2,500 donations in that cycle, in the 2018 cycle. This was one of those. $2,500 is no slouch of a donation.
No, it's not.
And TWTME, I thought, I wonder what that is. Well, I looked and looked and looked. It was like really well hidden. I looked through the cannabis registration at the state level. I looked through business ownership licenses. I looked through everything, and it was like I could not decipher. So I found somebody who deciphered for me and said, oh, well, that would be Tim Wright at Tim and Mike Enterprises. And when I looked up Tim and Mike Enterprises, ba-ding, Queen of the Dragons Collective pops up in Shasta Lake City. And so I've had people subsequent, you know, when I've told them that, they've said, well, it's a legal business. And he says that, too. It's a legal business. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, that's nice, but that doesn't mean you should do it. I mean,
yeah. Do you want that legal business in your community?
Our member of Congress was asked to provide a certificate for High Times Collective because they were business of the year in Shasta Lake City. And it's like, not using taxpayer funds for that. And no, thank you, by the way. We'll do it for all the other businesses, but not that. That was a piece of paper,
right?
Unwilling to dish out on their behalf. So
I had that same one come across my desk because the sheriff's department gives.
Oh, does certificates too?
Because that's our contract.
That's right. It was the Shasta Damboree, and so, they're like, oh, High Times Collective. Boo.
Yep, nope, I wouldn't sign that one either.
No, completely not doing that. And I called the mayor, and I said, by the way, you know, just in case they think we forgot, please let them know we didn't.
Right.
We specifically didn't do it.
It's a legal business. I'll give them that. But
$2,500 to your sheriff. And then I had somebody ask me, they said, well, maybe he didn't know. I'm like, Queen of the Dragons? Really? What do you think it was? A shop that sells, you know, socks? Or
it's a massage parlor. It's what that type of business brings to your community.
Ugh.
And what it does. I mean,
and they claim it's bringing all these taxes and all that stuff, but I don't think they're looking at the human cost.
No.
It's telling children that it's in a store, so it's got to be good for you. It's just giving all sorts of bad messages. But there was no way that there was confusion with that because Mr. Green was a deputy sheriff in Shasta Lake City during that time, and that's where the collective was. So just to, like, debunk and unwind all of that. So as far as I'm concerned.
Well, go ahead and ask. No.
Disqualifier.
I'll just answer for you right now. No, I have not accepted any marijuana.
It's funny, I wasn't even going to ask you, because if you did, I wouldn't have you in here. Again, we don't feed the bears. Completely not doing it. That's just crazy.
Well, I think it blurs the lines way too much. You're law enforcement. You're out supposed to be protecting our county here. And after that, illegal grows and stuff. So,
well, you can't. Hold a position like that and then say, well, I didn't know they
How would you not
know? They got their supplies, you know, illegally.
But still, it's just promoting all the wrong stuff. That's I don't know, your law enforcement. It was funny. I mentioned this at a public thing because it keeps coming out of my mouth. I can't shut up about it. And if you take dope money, I'm coming for you, by the way, so you should rethink that. And I said that, and it was really funny. There was another candidate in the back, not law enforcement or anything, came running up and said, I just put a sign in that guy's vacant lot, but I'm going to go take it down right now.
Oh, candidate.
And I was totally laughing. I'm like, okay, I wouldn't have actually known that. And he goes, I didn't know that.
Well, but look at though.
He had just put it up that day, and he ran and took it down.
Whoever that is, and we won't mention their name.
Bob Holsinger.
Oh, well, good for Bob.
Yeah.
That shows integrity out of Bob.
I know. I was like, but it was kind of funny. He came running up. He goes, oh. I didn't know that, and I kind of chuckled. So, in an instance, I only mentioned that in that kind of an instance. You might not know. It wasn't like it was in the window of the business,
right?
But this definitely came from that company. So, as we move forward and start looking, I mean, people get hysterical if members of Congress take money from Monsanto, for instance. He might raise $1 million, and Monsanto contributed $1,000, and oh, my God, they're heretics. And I'm thinking, well, I think if you're running for sheriff and you take $2,500 from a dope, store.
Right. You put it in perspective on what that's worth.
Well, I particularly enjoy.
What do you particularly enjoy, Bill?
Parking my car and walking next to somebody sitting in their car smoking dope.
Oh, I love that, too.
And it's like, okay, so you're going to be a menace on the road. Now, I'm going to assume that they bought it legally at a legal shop.
No, you're not.
And, well,
you're going to mock them like I do.
It's a legal business, so that's got to be where it came from.
Right.
Okay.
And so, they're going to wait until all the effects wear off before they turn over the engine and go home, right?
It's everywhere.
It is everywhere.
It's just, I don't know. It's a scourge in your community.
It's not improving anyone's life, and once they, they've done a very good job, just like they do with cigarettes, hiding the fact that it's addictive, that it's toxic, all those things. We hid that for a long time, advertised it as, you know, take the edge off. You know, my doctor smokes unfiltered Camels. How that ever worked out, but we still have those ads.
Right.
We've all seen
them. Well, no contribution comes without some sort of expectation down the road.
Oh, back to campaign? Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
So, I mean,
I'm not going to say anybody's bought off by any industry. That's such an overused term, and, you know, that's kind of silly.
Yeah,
but
it's not good
you just
judgment.
Have to look at priorities, I think. Yeah. I think it speaks volumes to priorities and focus and judgment.
When you're talking about the issue at hand, which is clearly not a bought-off issue by society, right? The marijuana
right.
is a big deal.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It is still, I don't care what anybody says, it's still a gateway drug. It still has its share of issues. It still brings in a nasty criminal element.
And in rural areas
people,
where they're growing
these people
it,
that
oh my gosh.
Are running these cartel grows
yep.
are the same people human trafficking, the same people bringing fentanyl and
they're
heroin
dangerous
and
people.
Everything
sex
else.
Sex trafficking, child trafficking.
Yeah.
It's just there is. And so we do a lot of shows about
what
happens in our rural areas as a result of this.
Tell them who showed up at the meeting up in Doris. Who was standing in the back of the room taking pictures?
Oh, well, the
Serenios?
Yeah, the Serenios and the Norteños that are there.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you had people. You had the Hmong that showed up. And
taking pictures of all the citizens that were protesting.
They hold their cameras. They always do. They hold their videotape cameras up to their chest. Well, it's really funny. I can't see my phone when it's when I hold it like right close to myself under my chin. My eyes don't really work like that. So I'm assuming they're not looking at their phone. They're filming the people who are speaking. And
but how intimidating is that? I mean, if you're grandma and grandpa live out on a country road and you're out there protesting these grows that they have to deal with on a daily basis, and you got those types of people in the back of the room taking your picture.
Well, they were sitting right in the chairs.
Yeah.
They weren't even hiding in the back.
Yeah.
Just marched in. There was a lady in that lady and her husband in that room. They have 40,000 acres. Who are you going to see on 40,000 acres? Like God? You know, you're not intersecting with anybody. The public isn't there.
Right.
And yet they have all sorts of problems.
Sure.
With the white growers, the Asian growers, the Mexican growers, they've got all these problems. 40,000 acres, you can't get away from it? Yeah. I mean, most people couldn't even tell you how big 40,000 acres.
Well, if you have 40,000 acres, you know you've got some trespass grows going on there. Just that.
Oh yeah.
That's what we are right now, and that's exactly the war we're launching, and that's what we want to go after.
So what are some of the we're running out of time, and real quick, what are some of the issues that you're going to tackle for us when you're reelected?
Well, you know, the jail's a hot topic, and everybody wants more bed space at the jail, which I'm with everybody on that one. We do need more jail space. So, I'm tackling that in kind of a twofold plan. And at first I was just for the long term. We need a new jail and a new campus, you know, which includes mental health and drug addiction and work release and all that. And I'm still on that mantra, but, also in the meantime, we're going to try to look at some way to remodel maybe some existing buildings we have or something for, more bed space, because we do need more bed space.
I mean, we didn't even get into any of that
one
stuff.
One of the things that I tell people, Bill, with this is that people don't quite understand. I use this as an example, and these are just arbitrary numbers. So we have 500 people in Shasta County that account for 90 to 95% of the calls for service, police, medical, fire that show up, and it's a revolving door. And now, tomorrow, suddenly I have 1,000 bed spaces in the jail. That does not mean those 500 people are now off the streets and locked up in the jail because I have the bed space. Because we're dealing with a population of mental illness, a population of drug addiction, and a population of several people homeless that are committing low-level misdemeanor crimes.
Well, things that don't lock you up for any period of time, and then California has
have the decriminalization of everything. So it's not a solve just to get bail or bed spaces. Mm-hmm. That's my point here. Yes, we need those bed spaces for the criminals that don't get it and who need to be locked up and we need to put away. So we do need the bed spaces for those, but we need to take care of that other aspect at the same time, because the goal is to clean up our community and get these people off of our streets and out of the doorway of businesses, off of the river, camping and polluting. And
at the post office on Churn Creek, I'll tell you what, we have a P.O. box there, and on the right-hand side, there's an alcove. I think there's a door there. They used to do passports or something in there.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what, you pull up to the post office, there are legs sticking out of that every single time, and it's like...
Frustrating.
Yeah, that's where, you know, we... Oh, yeah, Bill took a picture of it.
I went to the bank the other day, and there was...
That's where, and you know, honestly, that's where we're all taking concealed weapons classes and all that kind of good stuff.
And as we should. I mean, anybody who...
It's our job to protect ourselves at the end of the day.
Law-abiding citizen that qualifies for CCW, man, I'm first one to ready to issue it to you. I'm 100% for that.
Yeah, and for the just to dispel the last thing, you were appointed to complete a term that was vacated.
Yes,
that is not a weird nefarious thing. That's the way our system is set up.
Yeah,
because we don't want
50% of the sheriffs at one time here just recently.
Yeah, you got to fill the term,
because that's what happened. So, and the other thing I tell people with that one is, you know, I didn't choose that process. I'm not the one that said, hey, let's do an appointment and appoint me. I learned that they were going to appoint a sheriff. I learned that they were going to be a vacancy.
Right.
So I pursued it, and they picked the best and the most qualified candidate for that, which is me. And, you know, I am that change that people said that they've been wanting in the sheriff's department, and it's going the right direction. And don't take my word for it. Ask the men and women that I work with and ask them if it's not going the right direction.
Well, so, I hear a lot of good things from the people in the sheriff's office. And at the end of the day, honestly, you know, go on Zillow and look at the home values in Anderson. Honestly, that really has been very interesting to me.
I am very proud of, very humble.
You guys did a really good job there.
It truly is the example of what our whole county can
absolutely
be. You know, that's
I'm counting on
that's
it.
That's unity, and that is people working together, all have the same vision and achieving the end result. And it doesn't have to be just Anderson. It could be this whole county.
Sure.
And that's what I'm hoping.
So I would encourage people out there that are looking at especially your elected sheriff, because your police chiefs are appointed by your city councils.
Right.
But your elected sheriff, I would encourage you to go look at their campaign filings, look at who is supporting them, because it's very telling. And if there are things on there that are kind of coded and kind of surreptitious, do some digging, because there is a lot of money in the pot industry out there right now, and they are supporting a lot of candidates And they're not lightly doing that.
On that note of the candidates thing.
We've got 10 seconds, sorry.
Okay, I appreciate it.
I walked you
support.
Into the corner and then.
Please look at your candidates individually,
yes.
Not lumped together, and look
right.
at their qualifications.
Great
Absolutely.
Point.
And
an
vote on your
point.
Own accord.
Okay. Yep, do some homework and look and see what you find. And, all right, so. Mike Johnson.
Thank you for having me.
We want you to keep doing the job.
Johnson for Sheriff 2022 is the Facebook. You can find information about me.
And
please
we have
remember
you
to vote.
On the site.
Thank
we
you.
WeThePeopleRadio.us. So go on there and look. And we thought this could be your theme song.
Yes, a good time. I don't want to stop at all.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life. Your health. Your choice, Shasta Regional Medical Center.